Welcome to the Shared Desk, episode 70. Did that sound loud to you? Maybe it's because it's been so long since we've done a shared desk that I was afraid that I'd forgotten what that theme sounded like. But it is the Shared Desk. I am your host, T. Morris. Just doing a quick intro because, as you can probably hear, I'm still a little rough around the edges. If you're curious as to why there's been such a big gap after going all through 2016 with almost a perfect batting record, go on ahead and go to my blog over at tmorris.com, and you will hear and read all about the month of January. Pretty rough month. There was everything from flu to a good amount of cold and flu, and it just I spent most of January flat on my back, so we're making up for lost time and things like that. Now, we are going to be back in 2 weeks with a brand new show, me and Pip, but I want to go on ahead and drop something in the feed that I've been meaning to drop for quite some time. It's a terrific panel recorded by the folks over at MagFest, and you can find out all about the 2017 event of January called MagFest at magfest.org, magfest.org. That's Music, Art, and Gaming Festival. And their AV crew, God love them, their AV crew was on point. And they shot this fantastic panel that was featuring myself, Nick Kelly over at nickkelly.com, and Robert V. Aldrich over at teachthesky.com. We were talking about storytelling in video games. And what I want to do is I want to go on ahead and basically put up the audio of this incredible panel. I'm going to fade it out right before we take questions. And if you want to see the questions or hear the questions and see our responses to said questions, you're going to have to go to thesharedesk.com and check out the YouTube video. And when you see the YouTube video, it's very cool. They really did a nice job putting it together, and they cranked it out. I mean, this was on the MagFest YouTube site within 24 hours of us doing it. And I can't say a bad thing about the MagFest experience. It's great. You've heard me and Nick talk about it. No, you haven't heard me and Nick talk about it. So I tell you what, next week, as a bonus feed, since you all have been waiting for us, I'm going to syndicate that episode of the Geek Wolfpack podcast so you can hear it. It's me and Nick Kelly riffing about the amazing experience that is MagFest, and that's over at geekfamilypodcast.com or geekwolfpackpodcast.com as well. They were getting all the URLs. So go on ahead and have a listen. Enjoy this panel, and if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, remember it's 703-791-1701. That's our voicemail. You can also drop us a line at t@tmorris.com or pip@pjballantine.com. And here you go, the MagFest panel, storytelling in video games, here on the Shared Desk.
So I'd like to introduce myself. I'm going to be sort of moderating these two. God help me. My name is T. Morris. I'm a science fiction fantasy author, New York published as well as self-published, and I also podcast my fiction. And we are here to talk about storytelling in gaming because I call myself a reluctant gamer. And I say reluctant because if I gamed as much as I wanted to, I wouldn't get any of my books done. So I get very picky about the games that I play, but I would like to go ahead and have the other panelists introduce themselves. To my farthest over here.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Robert Aldrich. I am also a novelist and serialist. I don't have a podcast, and after hearing yours, perfection has been reached. Why would we need additional ones? I'm self-published and small-published as well. I used to be a harder core gamer, and I'm a less harder core gamer, but not quite a casual gamer. I just got Turn of Soul on Final Fantasy XII, for the four of you that have done that. And if you have, you need to reevaluate some life decisions. And, sir?
Nick?
So my name's Nick Kelly. I am a longtime gamer, sometimes reluctantly, usually whenever I'm gaming with him, because he has no sense of direction.
I don't. We have a small crew in a game I'll be talking about later. the guy who we had that one guy who knows everything. We call him Wikipedia because his name is Nobilis Reed, so he's Wikipedia. Nick has a tendency to like to punch people in the face, so he's called the Punisher. And due to my amazing sense of direction, my call sign is Wrong Way.
That's right. So when I'm not gaming, I am an author. I'm a self-published author. I have a cyberpunk series that I write, and I write urban fantasy with my wife. And bunch it. And also co-founder and co-host of the Geek Wolfpack podcast.
Right.
Wait, that's you.
Ding.
That's you? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, we do ADHD D&D, so if you want to hear people ridiculously gaming while they should not be drinking as much as they are, then you should listen.
Woohoo! Great. Yeah. I think we actually gave a plug for Fanboy Glass because I have that big stein and I just fill it up with an IPA and I start off going, okay, let's get in here. And then by the end of the stein, I'm just like, what am I shooting at now? So the three of us, we have that writing background, and one of the things that we want to talk about before we get into this panel is what makes a good story? What is it about storytelling that what works for each of us before we get into the games that we want to highlight? So that's my first question. As a writer, and I'll start with Rob. Rob, what are the contents of a good story?
There are many contents, and it will depend on the story what is really important versus what is not. In my writing and in video games, and I'm currently reviewing the Transformers series from Gen 1 all the way through Robots in Disguise, and what's become very clear to me is how important consistency is. Even if you have a wacky, crazy, just inane world full of lunacy, there still has to be an internal rhythm. There still has to be an internal consistency. Look at movies like any of Mel Brooks' comedies. Look at Airplane, the work of the Zuckerman brothers. And even movies that are that zany, there's still an internal logic. The game that I selected for this is going to be a wonderful example, and I'll leave you guys in suspense about that. But I feel like internal consistency, when it is absent, oftentimes you'll think that something's wrong with the story, the movie, the book, the comic, whatever, but you won't be able to put your finger on it. It's like really good anatomy in an artist. Even if an artist is amazing at Photoshop and has incredible penmanship, if they do not have a good grasp of anatomy, there will be just something wrong you can't quite point at. That's what internal consistency is for me. And I think that's one of the key elements to a good story.
That is awesome analogy, because there's a guy in the vendor space downstairs, and he's wearing a t-shirt that has an album cover on it, and I won't say who it is, because if as soon as I tell you this, you guys will never unsee it. And it's a picture of a person's face, and somebody pointed out to me about 10 years ago that the eyes are like this, and now you can't unsee it, right? So, but it's like that. As soon as they pull you out of the story, you're gone. You can't get back into it. And so I think that's the consistency and maintaining believability and maintaining the story itself, I think, are absolutely huge. And I was a good boy. I didn't tell him that the eyes are, because I don't want to break his heart, because you'll never not see
and
it again.
And he wanted that shirt. Remember? He said, he told us. He really wanted that shirt.
Claude.
You are one sentence away from completely ruining that illusion.
I know.
That's a lot of power, my friend.
I know. And well, because he has something that I wanted to buy, and he won't sell it to me if I ruin his shirt. So.
You could get a discount that way, though. You could get a sweet discount that way. We could get a discount for all you people. That'd be awesome. Okay. So, yeah, for me, when I think of consistency in a story, I think it's not just in the storytelling. You bring up a lot of zaniness, and one of the things that popped into my mind was an old classic. This is way before any of you people were born. I take that back. It's before I was born. I saw it on television. It's a movie called It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Oh, good. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. And
yeah, people who watch TCM at 3 a.m.
And
whoever just cheered, go thank your parents.
Yeah. But in that film, there's all kinds of insanity going on, but every character is true to themselves. When the characters betray you, that's where I think that storytelling falls short. It's not just a storytelling from a plot point of view, but it's also storytelling from a character point of view. And as Rob said earlier, I think that you've got some stories that weigh more on the characters. You know, when you look at stories like Rogue One, when you look at Tomorrowland, when you look at
I knew that was coming up.
Thank you. when you look at films like, there's one that's it's on the tip of my, oh, Kubo and the Two Strings.
Mm.
If you haven't seen Kubo and the Two Strings, do yourself a favor and watch that. It's some amazing storytelling. But even in video games, whether you're playing the character or you're controlling a character, if the so long as the character is consistent with the decisions that you make, I think that is when you see good storytelling in video games. And what this particular panel is about is not necessarily we're going to just spend a whole bunch of time throwing out titles of different video games to try to one-up each other. It's not going to be that type of panel. What I've asked the panelists and myself is that we pick two games, and these are two games that we've played and two games that we believe in, and we talk about them, preferably an old school game and a new school game. And I guarantee you, the six games that we have up here, some of you, you may go, oh yeah, some of you go, they're on crack. But just keep in mind that we only have so much time to do the panel, and I wanted to not just have it be an onslaught of titles. I want it to be a real deep dive into what we as authors think make really good storytelling. So we're going to kick it off with Robert's too.
Right.
And Robert, this is your, we're going to kick it off with this particular game.
I didn't think I picked that one.
Yeah, you did.
Did I?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're off to a fantastic start.
Excellent. That explains so much about the slideshow you sent me. Fantastic.
It also explains that little note, hey, if you want me to make any changes, ask for them. So, yeah, this is great.
How's your improv, Rob?
Oh, well, no, I don't mind at all. I originally had wanted to do one story that as kind of a cautionary tale about how a really good story can be told ineffectively. But I'd also thrown this one out because this is possibly the greatest video game story ever told. Who has played? Yeah! In short, if you have played Final Fantasy VI or Final Fantasy III, we're not going to nitpick, it is one of the great masterpieces of video gaming, not just of the 16-bit era, not just of the Super Nintendo, not just of JRPGs, just of gaming in general. This is one of the most beautifully crafted stories. If you have not played Final Fantasy VI, I don't know what you're doing with your life. I really don't.
No pressure.
You need to get on. You got to make something happen. You don't need to eat every day to make this happen. Come on. But this is a beautiful story. And part of what makes it so incredibly investing is that not only are the individual characters, Seraph, Sabin, Cyan, Edgar, Locke, every single character, big and small. That's Final Fantasy V.
I know.
Okay.
I know. Roll with it.
All right. No problem.
If you had looked at the damn presentation, you would have said, that's Final Fantasy V.
I thought this was connected to somebody else had called Final Fantasy VI.
Ow!
Like, okay, don't yell at me. I'm fragile. I just had to make it through DC traffic.
I feel like a volleyball net right now.
Anyway. The Final Fantasy V and Final Fantasy VI can go together. See, I saved it. But because Final Fantasy V has five great characters that their stories are very, except for Bats, who's useless, but Boko is really fun, so you know what, it counts. But five really great characters. Final Fantasy VI has 39. And I honestly, I was joking, but I'm not, now that I start counting characters, I'm not sure. They might rarely have that many playable characters. It's a truly amazing menagerie of stories that not only run cohesively, every character has their own complete story arc, but they also all interact, intermix, interconnect. You are constantly finding yourself with two and three people whose lives have intersected in new ways. So by the end of the game, you do not have an adventuring party, you have a veritable family, because every single character has connected with every single other character in some fashion, big or small. Sometimes the interactions are only a single scene. Edgar and Shadow, I think, only have one scene together, and because it's Shadow, it may not even happen because he's a pseudo-hidden character. But every character comes out, and then, is it Ceres or Celeste? I keep mixing that up. Guys, come on, this is MagFest, just yell me the answer. Celis, there we go. Okay. Celis is very much the one cohesive unit that's traveling through all of these stories. The story will start with her, and it ultimately ends with her. And it is truly phenomenal. And again, this is on a 16-bit game. Very limited dialogue. Very limited emotive capabilities with these sprites. Very limited storytelling capacity in every metric we have today. And yet, this is a game that still holds up 20, 25 years later. This is truly one of the great masterpieces of gaming. And if you have not checked it out for the story alone, never mind the fantastic gameplay, never mind the really immersive world and graphics, even for a 16-bit engine, this is a transformative game that will redefine the medium for you. All right, your turn.
No, hang on. I want to counter with that.
I'm not following that.
Woo! So don't hold back. What do you really think? So you say it's transformative.
I'm sorry. Hang on one thing. And Kefka's a bastard.
So you say it's transformative. What is it about the storytelling? Is it that emotional investment that the gamer makes in playing the game?
It is the manner in which you glean all information about the world from the characters. There is very little overarching narrative. There's very little narration from any source except from the characters that you are playing and controlling. So without having a first-person perspective of the story and of the world, you're grasping the magnitude of everything that is happening. Seeing the two royal brothers, is it Sabin and Edgar? I always get the three of them, Sabin, Edgar, and Sion. I always get their names mixed up.
If only you had a room full of people who could answer that for you.
Yeah. The two royal brothers, they go back and forth constantly. One's the monk fighter, the other's the knight, who randomly has a chainsaw. Okay, sure, whatever.
Don't we all?
Yeah, I guess so. But their entire friction contributes nothing to the story. It has no bearing on any of the overall tale, and yet you become completely invested in it just by watching their dialogue, just by watching their interactions. And these dialogues are one or two dialogue boxes long.
Yeah.
And it's excellent just by how the story is told through the characters and their perspective rather than narration.
So that's Final Fantasy, and then we move on to...
The dumbest dumb that ever dumbed. How many of you have played Ratchet and Clank? Good.
Wow.
Excellent. How many of you have played anything other than the first game? I'm sorry. The rest of the games are really fun, but they really help to undermine part of the first game because of, going back to earlier, the narrative consistency. Ratchet and Clank opens up with a very, very lighthearted, very whimsical world where you have Ratchet, our nominal hero, who is basically a loser. His weapon of choice is a wrench because that's what he has handy. The Omni-Wrench 3000 or something like that. And he just stumbles into this effort to become multiple world-saving heroes, because he's fighting against an evil corporation that is trying to build a new world by yanking different pieces of other worlds and gluing them together, because that's how that works. The universe is completely nonsensical. The universe is incredibly zany, bordering on a Warner Brothers cartoon. And yet, it maintains this internal consistency, largely through the dialogue between Ratchet and Clank, to help establish when things are supposed to make sense and when they don't. So there's no guesswork about, is this normal for this universe? They make it clear through their interactions. It is a universe where capitalism has run amok and you can buy guns from a vending machine. And yet it is a world that is decidedly harmless in a lot of ways, where even the monsters that eat people just aren't quite that bad. And so everything is able to take a very comedic turn and very satirical, but it's still able to provide a great sense of gravity through these characters. Any questions?
I was going to ask. Nick, did you have anything for him? No?
No, keep going.
Yeah. So
I'm in awe.
Oh, please don't. It's just the shine off the top.
No. So you're saying that the original game possesses something that all the other that sequels do not.
Excellent. So yes, you're very correct. Yeah. The subsequent games, Going Commando, and then all the other ones after that, Ratchet is not a reluctant hero at that point. He is somebody who has the profession of being a hero, and he gets tasked to go off and do things. It's kind of the difference between Luke Skywalker and Beowulf.
Oh, I was just going to ask about how you compare that to Luke Skywalker.
in the first game, he's the reluctant hero.
Sure.
He's just trying to get his car working. Clank is able to hook him up, and he just runs with things from that point forward. He's only so invested in the entire story until he gets really burned by the bad guys, and then it's more of a story of revenge for him than, you know, trying to save millions of people. Subsequent games take that away, and they make him this heroic figure that's having to go out. And he's asked from the forefront, will you do this? And he says yes.
So it's a very unsatisfying character.
I wouldn't necessarily say unsatisfying, but it is not as investing, and the character is not as rich.
So
and he doesn't have the same vested interest that he does in subsequent games.
So both of the franchises you mentioned, Final Fantasy and Ratchet & Clank, both have recently come out with games, both of which, in fact, I was reading, I was kind of surprised that there was a lot of anticipation for the latest Final Fantasy, but some people have been either this game is exactly what I've been waiting for, it's been sort of a half and half.
Show of hands.
Yeah, show of hands. How many people thought the last Final Fantasy was worth the
15.
Wait?
15. He's talking about 15.
Okay, maybe not.
No, that's
so.
Don't assume
who's
everybody's played
it.
Yeah, go first.
Yeah, who's
there
played
it?
Ah, okay. Who's played it? All right, now keep your hands up if you thought it was worth the wait. So it's about half and half.
Didn't beat it yet. Okay. Caveat. Asterisk.
In their defense, the Final Fantasies have had a real problem where the game changes dramatically after like a week of gameplay.
Right.
Like if you play for 140 hours, then suddenly it gets good. So I don't know if that's the case.
So if you got 140 hours to spare.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Nick, you're up. And we're going to start with Nick's...
Which one are we doing first?
We're doing these in chronological order, just like I told you guys.
Oh.
In the slideshow that they never...
Oh, my God.
At.
I was in the beta for this. No, I looked at it because I took...
Are you really?
Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah,
dude.
Years ago.
Yeah, he really looked at my presentation before he got here. I just want to say
not what he was... So this is going to actually touch on a lot of points that Robert just made, primarily being a lot of the don't just spew it at me, actually, you know, get me immersed in it, right? So if you write, I'm a comic book guy, so if you write like a comic book, you want to get immersed in the comic book. You don't want to just have a panel that says, okay, and this is how we got to where we're getting, and there was a trade embargo, Phantom Menace, blah, blah, blah. So Asheron's Call, which sadly is back in the news because it's shutting down at the end of the month, started 17 years ago, and it was a Turbine property, and it was... a lot of fun, and to one of the points that Rob made, it's not a beautiful game. It wasn't a beautiful game when it started. It was just kind of clunky. But one thing that they did really, really well was they were consistent about putting out updates and changing the gameplay and keeping it fresh. And they did something that I don't think I've ever seen game designers do. Anybody in here have a career or a desire to be in game design? Okay, a lot of people, good. You're going to be competing with my kid in about 5 years, so just keep it sharp. So back in the day, right, let's get off my lawn, they had distinct servers, not just you log into this massive multiplayer game and it's just all mirrors and it's dynamic and all stands up and wherever you play your character exists and you just never know what server you're on. Back in the day, they were standalone servers. And there were five that were regular and there was one that was PvP and... If you wanted to get crushed and hate humanity, you got on the PvP server, and that was how it worked. So originally in the first year, they had a storyline where you went into this castle, and there was a crystal, and it was eternal winter everywhere, and if you broke the crystal, you restored the regular balance to the world. Pretty cool, right? Looked like crap, because you can see what the graphics look like, but it was a really cool storyline. Then a couple, 6, 8, 9 months later, they said, oh, there's more than one crystal. And you can get great tons of treasure and fame and fortune if you destroy all four crystals, right? Sound like the kind of thing you'd want to do in a video game where all you do is just level grind? But there's a catch. If you destroy all four crystals, you're going to release this guy, this demon, onto the earth, or onto the world. It wasn't earth. So the level cap at the time was 126, and this guy's level 999. So you have an idea of what kind of bad things you're doing to the world, right? Capitalist gone wrong. I want a couple of bucks, but I'm just going to scorch the earth in order to get it. So they did something that game designers pay attention, because this is important. They had an event where, for the entire month leading up to the end of this storyline, you could go PvP, and you could try to destroy the crystals, or you could try to defend the crystals. It's a lot of fun, because even if you're not all the time into PvP, and you've got a character who only has to be temporary PvP when you're in this campaign, then you could do that. And there were a lot of people that tried to destroy the crystals, and on one server they did it in like 3 days, and then one server they did it in like 3 weeks. And then on Thistledown, which is the only server, it was day 30, and the crystal was still in one piece. Now, as a game designer, you're telling your story. Do you want to go from then on, moving forward, every time that you do a patch, have 5 servers that have this story and 1 server that has this story? You can't do it. You can't put the Q&A time in. You can't keep things consistent, as we talked about consistency. So the devs did what the devs had to do. They had their super god ninja dudes come in at the last night, and they slaughtered everybody, right? And so the patch came out, and when the patch came out the next day, boom, the skies were raining blood, the rivers were running red, and Bael Zeron was out on all the servers. It's awesome. Actually, the first time he showed up on Thistledown, there was a level 6 dude who saw him and went, ah, just charged right at him and got nuked. So,
God love him.
It was great. And there was this one town that was out in the middle of nowhere, and you could go up to him and ask him for transportation there, and he'd send you there for free, but he would send you there 1,000 feet in the air, and then you would land and you'd get obliterated. So a lot of humor.
But I kind of feel like that level 6 guy that attacked the devil, they should have been like, you know what, we're giving you 1,000 XP, because...
Yeah. Oh, they should have, yes.
Only the first one.
Yeah.
Right.
Only the first one.
Yes. They were... I don't know if he was the father of Leroy Jenkins. I'm not sure. There's a chance. But go ahead and advance. So one of the things that they did, and it was the only thing that was different, is on that actual server... is that they put up a monument. You can advance it.
I don't have that.
Oh, you don't have it. It's just a statue that has... It was in there when I looked at the presentation.
No, it wasn't.
I sent it to you, so you're lazy for not putting it in there. But they had everybody who defended the crystal, so on that one particular server, it's the only instance of it. But that's a nice way to keep consistency in game design and keep the game going the way that you wanted it to, even when sometimes your gamers, all of you, don't do what the game designers expect. So it was interesting to adapt the story in that way. Okay.
Yeah. Before we go to the next one, I just wanted to ask real quick. So you're saying that the storytelling is done right in Asheron's Call is not only your ability to immerse yourself into the story, but also the developer's way of manipulating you to do the story the way they want to tell.
I think we all felt horribly robbed when the Shadow Ninja showed up on day 30. Go ahead. Well, I see over there.
If I was going to say to support him, my takeaway from his story is to make the interactor, the audience, whether it's readers, players, whatever, take the fork in the road that you want them to, but make them think it's your choice and your decision.
Yeah, and ultimately, we all would have gotten robbed of that. Logging in the next day and going, holy crap, it's raining blood. And I'm so glad that they actually did it. And then, because eventually, you know, you... got to the quest where Bael Zeron, who looks an awful lot like the first version, like the grandfather of the Taken King, spoilers. So that's a Destiny reference for those of you who don't play Destiny. You have to kind of get people to where you want them. You don't write a choose-your-own-adventure book with blank pages, you know?
There you go. So your next one that you talk about.
Now this, I will take and tell you, it is a beautiful game. And I don't know how many of you with your 3DSs are playing it right now, but I will tell you...
If you are, that is the highest compliment you could pay him right now.
That's pretty good. I put probably 150 hours or so into this game, mostly just because of the story and the soundtrack, because the soundtrack was unreal. And my kid probably put 100 hours into this game. And I don't know if they're here, but Video Game Haven out of Virginia Beach, I was in talking to the guy when this came out on the DS. I'm sorry if I'm leaning in too far, guys, AV guys. And I told him, I was like, yeah, I put like 100 hours into that game on the Wii. And he goes, yeah, I did about the same. And I go, that's great. And he goes, my dad retired and is trying to do every side quest and event in the game. He's logged 940 hours so far.
Man. Wow.
That man is my hero.
Yeah. I think he's all our hero today. Man, that's astounding.
So cool thing about this. So the two things that I love about this game, one is the world building, which is always important, right? You don't want to just, it can't all be side-scroll Super Mario too much. It can be, but, you know, you're in the limits. So one is the world building, and the other is the character interaction, which you talked about, the importance of that. The world building here is the backstory, and you get it in the beginning, in the intro, is that the entire world that your characters live on is the dead bodies of these two gods that were fighting for eons and eventually slaughtered each other, and they have just been there. And one's the biological one, and one's the mechanical one. And you start as this guy basically on like the foot of the biological god, and you get attacked by the mechanical dudes. I'm just very simplifying this, trust me. And you have the only weapon that can stop them. And so you have to eventually make your way throughout the entire landscape of the two dead gods. It's just, but everywhere that you go had a different visual hue and a different soundtrack and different set of beasts, and it was just incredible visuals. But to have that as the backdrop is great. Because if, go ahead.
The neat thing was also you had to backtrack often. And so there were monsters that were a lot stronger that you learned real fast, I'll come back to you. and so the world became so much richer because there were areas that you wouldn't go to an area, get all the stuff, and then leave and never go back there. You would constantly be returning to the same area, but finding new things.
That's right. Hey, you spider dudes who ate me when I was level 12, I'm level 60 now. Let's play. Right? So there was a lot of that. And there's some guys who are only at night during a full moon, during a rainstorm. So God bless that guy's dad. I hope he finishes the game before he dies. That's morbid, but I tell you.
He sounds close.
I don't know. You can go a long time. So that was part of it. But the other thing is that you build a party, and you've got a number of different characters who can be part of the party, and each of them can actually be the leader at different points in the game. And some people disappear for story purposes and come back. But there's actually an affinity chart. So as your characters are working together, not only does it increase how well they like each other and open up new dialogue, but it opens up new abilities. So there are things that you can do because you've played this combination of characters that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. And there are things that you can succeed at in side quests, and the main story is the main story, but there are things that happen just because you have immersed the time getting these characters to like each other. And if you put up with the little pocket Ricky thing, even 100 hours is enough of that, dude. but it just changes everything that you're able to do within the game. And I thought that was an interesting dynamic, but also it gets back to think about how that works in the games that you like and the movies that you like and the things that you read, right? If a certain set of characters never bury the hatchet, do they actually all get together and accomplish what they're trying to accomplish? I think we probably can all name games where that has to happen, right? Or they start off as enemies, but they have to eventually come together and work together reluctantly or otherwise, you know? So just that character affinity on top of just the beautiful visuals and the stellar soundtrack, I think we're awesome. I don't think I have anything else on that. Are we done?
Yeah.
That one? Good.
Yeah.
So now T gets to talk.
I got to talk first.
Oh, hold on. We're going to give you we left ourselves short on purpose so we could ask questions.
Yeah.
So keep that. You're going to be our first one, dude, who just raised his hand.
Yeah. We're going to, yeah.
Just remind me that you're, don't, never mind. Don't remind me.
Okay. So yeah, as I said before, I'm a reluctant gamer because I lost many, many hours on my first pick. I lost a ton of time back in the 90s. On this one, yeah. Respect the classics, man! Respect the classics! Myst. The storytelling element of Myst fascinated me when I first played this game. And I think what makes it such a fascinating game and still gets that response from people and touches everybody in that very special way is that Myst tells a story after the story's done. You basically wake up in this world and you have no idea where everyone is. You have no idea what has happened, but you've got to spend a lot of time trying to flip this lever or solve this puzzle to figure out what happened. And then when you figure that part out, it leads to another clue.
Sounds like MAGFest on Sunday morning.
It pretty much is. I remember being exhausted after performing in a show or something and getting back to my apartment, but then firing up that Apple IIe, no, not Apple IIe, I'm sorry, the Apple 7200, and playing Myst until at least 3 in the morning. I actually filled out the journal. And
you can find that in the computer museum downstairs.
Yeah,
later.
I know. If you're wondering, what was that model? It's in the computer museum. But the deeper you got into the game, the more the story revealed itself. And I remember thinking that there were other games that I was playing back then, but Myst was the one that I always went back to. And I'm not sure what went wrong in some of the sequels. I remember making it only a few hours into Riven and saying, I'm done. And I'm not sure what Myst had that Riven didn't. Maybe it was that Riven was making the puzzles so hard that they were no longer entertaining. I think that's possible in a story. You can make a story that is so dense and that is so complicated, you stop enjoying yourselves. And to me, when you're in a story, when you're being told a story, or when you're trying to uncover a mystery, if it's too hard, then why are we doing this to ourselves? I hate to say this, and I know, I'm sure there are some fans out there, but I liken it to when I was watching The Walking Dead.
Hey.
Sorry.
You just woke up trying to figure out what happened to the rest of the humans, dude.
Yeah, I know, and that was great. But then after a while, it became Misery Porn. And I just couldn't slog my way through it. But with Myst, I think the storytelling aspect that we kept going back to was, what happened here? What have we discovered? And what, you know, where are we going with this? And I think the payoff was worth it. A good example of that in storytelling, non-video game related, it just came out on Netflix. If you haven't seen it yet, I got him turned on to it. It's called Spectral.
Oh.
If you haven't seen Spectral on Netflix, do yourself a favor. This is a nice little sleeper that has kind of nested itself in the depths of Netflix. And the payoff at the end reminded me of the payoff in Myst. The payoff in Myst, I was like, oh wow, this was where we were going? Okay.
Spoilers.
And it was the same thing in Spectral. So yeah, Myst has a very soft spot for me. So now we get to my current du jour to play. And I know I'm going to probably get some backlash on this. And if I do, it's okay. Because I have a caveat for this.
There we go.
One guy! Thank you.
It only takes one guy.
It only takes one.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay, so, yeah, Destiny. All right. You can see, especially if you're a writer, you can see the moment in the game where the writers basically put down their pads and pencils and said, we're out. See ya. Because after that, this is what I liken it to. It was like watching season 5 of Game of Thrones. To finish year 1 of Destiny was that. To finish The Dark Below was that. It was like getting through Game of Thrones season 5. So we could get to season 6. Or as I like to call it, The Taken King. The minute The Taken King came out, I was like, okay, this is the story I've been wanting to do. And we talk about consistency, and that was the feeling I got. There was more of a thread, a consistent thread that I could follow as a part to just mow down bad guys, pick up stuff. Here, there were actual stakes involved. There were now these super baddies that not only you didn't like, but your enemy didn't like. So now you're fighting a battle on two fronts. And I remember playing as the character in Destiny, being a little terrified when my gun would go off and the Fallen would turn around and the Taken would turn around, and I'd go, I am so freaking screwed right now. It was a refreshing change that we finally had that consistency. And I think the consistency with Destiny is that you are the character. You are the main character. and it is up to you to make the choices to move forward in the game. It's a fascinating journey to take as a gamer, because with each skill you get, you improve in your abilities. And this was all new game mechanics to me. This was all brand spanking new. I know there are other games out there. I know there's Mass Effect. I know there's Skyrim. I know, but I don't have the time for that. But I remember sitting behind Destiny from just a visual standpoint, going, "This is going to totally screw up my productivity," and it did, and I regret nothing.
And to our earlier point, if this was the three characters, T and myself and our buddy who we play with, his guy would be looking over there.
Yeah. But the thing that I get the most excited about with Destiny is, since the Taken King, they have been ramping up, because they knew, and I give Bungie credit, they owned it. They said, "We lost the writers, we're sorry, we're not going to let that happen again." That's when we got Rise of Iron. Now, I don't know if, for those of you who stick it out in Destiny, it's worth it to get to Rise of Iron, because not only are you invested in yourself as a character, the other characters involved in this particular moment, you should find this cutscene in Rise of Iron. It's the boss battle that happened before, and you're picking up the pieces afterwards. And the look on this character's face when she gives up her life to shut down Siva, it's gut-wrenching. There are performances, there are character-generated performances in The Taken King and in Rise of Iron that I think rival some of the movies that have come out of late. It's just gut-wrenching stuff. And when you become emotionally involved with characters that are just pixels on a screen, albeit a lot of pixels on a screen, that to me is good storytelling, because now you're invested emotionally. And it's that emotional investment that takes it from a good story and makes it a great story. And what I've heard about Destiny is that for year two, which is supposed to be coming out, and nobody knows what's coming, they just know that this is the last report that I read, was that the head writer from Mass Effect Andromeda, after he wrapped there, he went over to Bungie, and he's got a hand in what's going on. I'm just going to say it again. I have not played Mass Effect, but I have friends who've played Mass Effect, and they are beating me with a 2x4 to play Mass Effect because they know how crazy I am about Destiny. But one other thing I do like about the storytelling aspect of Destiny is that you don't just become the main character. It's the people that you roll with that also become characters in this story, and each of them take their own personalities. He's the Punisher. He's like, where's Nick? You know, Nobilis is like, where's Nick? He's punching somebody. Then you hear, boom, there he is.
Jesus.
You didn't think that was coming? Boom, there he is again. I mean, it's just, that's the way Nick plays.
It usually goes like this. "Hey, Nick, make sure you don't punch those, yeah, they explode."
And then that's when Nobilis turns around and goes, "Where's T?"
He's in the other room.
And he's like, he's in the other frontier. Don't worry, he'll get here eventually.
He's fine.
And then you hear the boomf. Boomf. I'm not a very good driver. I'm not an excellent driver.
No.
Not an excellent driver. but the fact that it's that immersive storytelling and that immersive experience that you not only get with your friends, I think that ramps Destiny that much higher. That's why it's so high on the scale for me.
And if you want to hear all the questions that we got after our panel, go on ahead and jump on over to theshareddesk.com, and there you'll find at the top of the post, you'll see the video. The really slick video that the folks put together over at MAGFest. So to wrap up, 2017, yes, even though my voice is a little harsh, it'll clear up hopefully before this weekend so we can actually do a proper show. But we've also got events coming up, and I'm just going to give a quick rundown. 18th to the 19th of February, we are going to be at Farpoint 24 in Timonium, Maryland. We're going to be there with Lauren Scribe Harris. So go on ahead, drop on by. We have a table in the dealer's room. Swing on by and say hi. And then the week after that, Starting in the 24th of February, ending on the 5th of March, the Smoky Writers Retreat. This is the 2017 edition. I intend to go there and record audio. I recorded audio from last year. I may throw with some of that into the feed so it can get you into the mood of how things went last year. And that's just going to be us deep diving. Me, Pip, Scribe, Peege, Matt, a whole bunch of people just getting stuff done. And then 28th through the 30th of April, RavenCon 12 in Williamsburg, Virginia. Go on ahead and check us out there. Now, Nick Kelly and I, we're reaching out to different events. We're reaching out to a whole bunch of people that are coming to town, and we want to find out if they want us on the docket. So we're looking at AwesomeCon. We're looking at Escape Velocity. We're looking at a whole bunch of events coming up. If you want to find out more about these events, if you want to find out what is happening in your area, you need to check out the Nerd Out app. Go on ahead and download it for your phone, iPhone or Android, and find out what's happening in your neck of the woods. It is fan-run. It is fan-powered. It's a great way to find out what's happening in your area. My voice is still hanging in there, so let me just quickly ask you, what was your favorite show or most informative show of 2016? We want to hear your feedback, so go ahead and call us at 703-791-1701. You can access that through the Instagram app. You can send me email at t@tmorris.com. or Pip at pjballantine.com. That's Pip at pjballantine.com. And you can find us, of course, on social media. And not only can you listen to us on iTunes, you can listen to us on Stitcher. I don't know how many of you are listening to us on Stitcher. I don't know if you knew if we were on Stitcher, but we are on Stitcher. Something I've got to make sure that I let people know. So find us where you can. And on a rather somber note, I want to say some geeky. I want to wish some geeky goodbyes. At the time of this recording, Richard Hatch passed away. He was Apollo in the original Battlestar Galactica, and then he got a second bite at the apple, and came back as Tom Zarek in the Battlestar Galactica reboot of the early aughts. Every time I met him, he was a really nice guy. I was kind of surprised when he actually called out to me by name at Dragon Con, of all places. Could not have been a nicer man. I interviewed him with Jack Mangan on the Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy. He had a plane to catch. He was like, no, 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 let's sit down, let's record. And he could not have been a more gracious individual. And as an actor, I mean, what a lucky opportunity to not only be on Battlestar Galactica, but then decades later come back on the show and rock and roll it as an entirely different character and actually have have scenes opposite of the guy playing the role you played. So wanted to do a quick shout out to that. And one more, Brian Ford, Val Griswold Ford, longtime friend, longtime writer mate over at Dragon Moon Press. Brian was my age, and he just recently passed away due to a heart attack. And it was a very humbling moment when we all received word that this happened. And Val's going through some ups and downs right now, as you can imagine. But she's standing strong, Kia Kaha. And I just want to make sure that Val knows we're out there. We being all of us in the podcasting community, all of us in the writing community, we're out there. And we're thinking of you, and we love you. So I just wanted to say those quick geeky goodbyes. Kind of a softer tone to end the episode on, but you know, it just goes to something that another friend of the show, Christine McDonald, who also had a loss this week, she basically said, "You don't know when it's going to happen. So if you've got plans, do it. Just go on ahead and do it. Whatever you have planned, whether it's taking a trip somewhere that you've been meaning to go to, whether it's getting in touch with a friend that you know is only a phone call away, but you just haven't made the time to contact that person, or if it's sitting down and writing a book or a short story, or starting up a podcast, do it. Just go on ahead and get it done. On that note, hey, everybody, thanks again for listening. Remember, you can see the whole panel from MagFest at thesharedesk.com. And until next time, take care of yourselves. We'll catch you later and enjoy the ride.